come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Hello. Today we're talking about wisdom. Not the telling people what to do kind of wisdom, but the kind of wisdom that we've learned through making mistakes, through our losses, and through experiencing joy. It's the insights that we came to slowly, maybe later in life, or the ones that we should have trusted sooner. They're the ones that we know in our hearts to be true. There are other aspects of wisdom, and we can bring them up as we go, but let's start. What wisdom do we have to offer today?
Dead silence?
I think there's this hesitancy to sort of jump, not to jump in and say what wisdom we want to share today, because nobody's really asked us what wisdom we want to share today, and I think that's part of this whole dilemma of what do we do with the wisdom that we have, because I feel like I'm cautious about sharing any wisdom if somebody hasn't asked me first, right? And so,
right. Yeah, it may be presumptuous to assume we are holders of wisdom.
Yeah, exactly.
After all these years.
Yeah,
and I don't want to sound like I'm telling people what to do, because that's the last thing that I'm about.
Yeah, it comes across as very condescending.
It can. So maybe the question is, how do we share our wisdom when invited?
Yeah.
Well,
we're inviting ourselves here.
We're inviting ourselves to share our wisdom.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes even, you know, say if you're talking to others about something you've learned, storytelling, you know, maybe sharing the personal experience without any sense of arrogance, maybe with a sense of humility. You know, for example, perhaps how we discovered what our path in life is, or how we realize we still are looking for answers.
Looking for what we want to be when we grow up.
So I think personal stories can help, as long as we don't overwhelm people with stories that go on and on for over half an hour and put everyone to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, storytelling is really actually a good way to impart wisdom without being the teacher. And I say that with quotes around that, because as Jack and I have talked over the years, having been an elementary school teacher and he a professor, and I think Signe and Rick have also taught in some aspects of their profession as well. But yeah, I like the idea of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about, you know, telling our grandchildren, especially telling them stories and kind of couching that in some way. Kind of brings the storytelling, but it also brings the wisdom of the family into it, right? They're learning something from me, from, you know, decades ago or whatever, or pieces I've picked up in my life.
They're learning the choices that you made when faced with something similar in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of how I view storytelling with my kids and our granddaughter, if she's experiencing something, mm-hmm. and I share a similar experience I may have had and what I did or what I felt to kind of invite the conversation.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the key to imparting wisdom, if we feel that is when we make a connection with someone else. Like, it's not just random out of the blue, this is what I've learned, this is what you have to receive and accept and mimic, but rather that perhaps in a situation that they've come up with And what we've learned, where we create first a connection with them. So it's something that they realize that we've had a similar experience, or one that can give them a bit of insight. I think that's quite important too.
Or maybe it doesn't even matter. It's the connect, trying to connect and mm-hmm. listen.
Yeah, I think so too. I also, when we were thinking about doing this podcast, it made me think back to the pieces of wisdom that I've learned about myself and how I've dealt with life as well, right? And so looking back on my life and seeing some placeholders or some markers in my life helps me have some wisdom and understanding about who I am today and how I can have a relationship with people or be in a relationship with people or do that storytelling task, mm-hmm. right? It was probably my mid-50s where I started to understand what trauma does to a life, right? Mm-hmm. Not ever thinking that a tragedy was actually a trauma, which is rather silly when you think about it. You could go through your whole life, a tragedy is not a trauma, but to start reading more on trauma or hearing stories from other people started to sort of fit into the picture about, you know, maybe I'm learning something, I'm gaining some wisdom about myself and the way that I relate to the world. So I think for me, that's one of the ways I've really appreciated the wisdom that has come from within.
Applying your own wisdom to your...
Yeah.
As you move forward.
As you move forward, yeah, for sure.
Applying
yeah.
the things that you've learned to your life as you move forward. I like that.
Yeah. One of the things that's crossing my mind is that I think often when we get to our age, we realize that our generation isn't seen as the wisdom holders like perhaps in ancient times or times... ancient times. Yeah, I'm talking about times of art.
1960s.
yes, those ancient times for sure. I was thinking more like 500 or 1,000 years ago. But I wonder if part of that is, what struck me here is the conversation is that there are many sources of information and many sources of wisdom, whereas mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, millennia ago, the ancient person was the storyteller, the keeper of wisdom, the only source of knowledge that people could access. And so their insight, their information, their sharing was seen, it was revered and seen as critical. Whereas now you can go online, you can go to libraries, you can read all kinds of books on trauma, for example, and that. And because of that, maybe that's why we're hesitant to go out and share our wisdom, because we feel we're just like yelling into a vacuum or speaking to a wall where nobody knows, nobody cares. And that's not to say we don't have the wisdom to share, but people will find many other sources as well.
Well, that brings me back to the context and the relational mm-hmm. part of, you know, when we're with people that we're in relationship with and working through something or asking for mm-hmm. talking about something or mm-hmm. and in that context of the relationship and the caring to share mm-hmm. Sharing wisdom. I mean that's one way mm-hmm. That it's meaningful and that maybe at least I feel like it might be worth something to my daughter and granddaughter when I can share an experience I had and put it in the context of, you know, generations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder too whether I've always had in my mind and in my teaching a distinction between knowledge and wisdom. Mm, yeah. Like knowledge, we're soaked in knowledge, mm. especially with artificial intelligence now, that 50 times faster than Google can access the world's literature, at least all of it that's been fed in so far, and assimilate it in an instant and spew it back to you in a text, no matter what the length, and even talk to you rather mm-hmm. than text. Mm-hmm. And so information, there's definitely an information overload. So who carries the wisdom then? Who are the wisdom keepers? And what does wisdom entail if it's not knowledge? Mm-hmm. But it's, information, I mean.
It's not, but it's not, it's in the definition in some ways. It's knowledge and experience. So it's that experiential thing that makes that knowledge more than just knowledge. It makes it a truth of some kind for you, or something that you strongly believe to be true, or have found that continues to guide me. I'll speak personally through my life. And one of those truths for me is that there is the phrase, there's always a way. Mm-hmm. And I have always, when problem solving with my kids, or again, I think we maybe talked about this, when I'm struggling with something, I always have that thought, there's always a way through this. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you might be backing up and getting out and taking another path, but there's always a way through whatever it is that you're facing.
Mm-hmm. And I've always been crisis oriented, and you've taught me, I'll never forget you saying, bad things do happen, but not often.
Yeah.
And that settled my crisis instinct down.
Yeah, only once a day.
Yeah, only once a day.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you say that, because I remember a couple of years ago when we were sitting here talking and there was some kind of conversation about how the day hadn't gone very well and everything, and I said to Rick, well, there's always another day. And then I stopped and I looked at him and I said, oh my God, I sound like my mother. Uh-huh. Because that was one of her
key phrases
that she used throughout our childhood, right? Was, you know, when you went to bed at night, you know, and you worried about everything that had happened that day or whatever. And she said, well, there's, you know, Elaine, there's always another day.
Yeah.
and it's just, it's such a weird feeling to have that piece of wisdom flow back into my head and find its place in my life again.
I wonder whether wisdom isn't really subtle in terms of, it's not necessarily a verbal phrase or an assertion like bad things do happen, but not often.
Not often.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's subtler than that, I think.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it can be a life lived. Like when we were talking about this and you talked about the difference between knowledge and wisdom, I think of my father a lot because, I mean, he only had a grade 5 education. And yet the way he applied, say, his ethics, his beliefs, his relationships with other people, I mean, I find him incredibly wise and very, mm-hmm. very knowledgeable in that way. And that was that always, you know, someone who was going to university, which he could never have attained to because of circumstances, I find that I would still look up to him because the wisdom was something that actually, in some way, more foundational, the way he lived it, was more foundational than in fact just all the knowledge I was accumulating.
Even though it may not have been explained at length.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you need knowledge to understand complexity and responding to situations that are more complex than just, you know, mm-hmm. bad things happen and not very often.
Well, just for an example, yesterday... Now I've lost it. I was working on the lawnmower, right? And I was watching you in action. And you really weren't absolutely sure what you were going to do. But you just kind of went at this complex little machine and took each piece sort of and kind of pulled it or looked at it or touched it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon I looked over doing this and we both kind of looked at each other and said, he can just do this. He can look at a piece of machinery and figure this out. Now, he never took a course in mechanics.
No, my guiding principle is don't wreck it, don't make it worse. Try if you can't fix it, try and at least leave it the same. Don't
make it worse. That's
right. Yeah, so very careful and methodical.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think we've been caught up in the education system in some ways that says all this knowledge is really what's going to make you a wise person, right? And I'm not sure I believe that anymore.
Well, that's the one thing that I think the faculty at the university I taught at were good at, recognizing that we're not just disseminators of information. Mm. And thank heavens we realize that, because now you don't even need teachers. Mm-hmm. Right, you didn't need professors. You can go online and find out more than they will ever know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of scary. But so we saw ourselves as shapers of character. So ethics was very important.
Mm-hmm. Teaching critical thinking.
And teaching critical thinking,
I think,
absolutely.
You can get all that knowledge, but if somebody doesn't teach you how to discern it,
yes,
that information, right? So you do need teachers and knowledge keepers and higher educated.
Who are thoughtful about their teaching and then bring in those other components, mm-hmm, of the relationship piece again.
Yeah.
And the putting it in the context of a larger picture. Mm-hmm.
But that's not true of every college, university.
No,
is it?
No. It is not.
No.
Not with the emphasis on STEM.
Yeah, yeah, right. Which is just get your education and...
So you can enter the job market, yeah, and have the tools.
Yeah, you know, get a haircut and get a real job. That's that's the phrase, right?
It's another piece of wisdom from your dad.
Well, that's true.
Get a haircut. He
did not like the long hair, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's our generation too, baby boomers.
Yeah.
Because my parents were the same thing. You must go to university. Well, I was a sad student in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, I had a geography teacher who told me, Jack, I don't think you should go to university.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I came home and told my parents that. They were furious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that. He was undermining what they were
that
seeing as a huge priority.
That was their aspiration for their kids to go to university.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that seems like that's a common, we've talked about this before, a common thread that all of us had where our parents, or at least one of the parents, really emphasized the idea of, you know, higher education, you know, go get educated. And I think that was especially they saw through their experience how critical that was at the time. Now, maybe it's not as critical for the next generation coming up, but that was critical, and they would instill that in us. To them, that was essential wisdom to build your life. And I think that was drilled into each one of us, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the message that I got went further than that. Uh-huh. My mother was very clear. She didn't expect us to get married or have grandchildren. She just expected us to, you know, get our education and do what we wanted to do, which is great, but not a lot of direction.
No. But that would have been a bit countercultural at the time,
wasn't it? It was very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. My mom knew early on that it was important for women to have their freedom.
Yeah. So wisdom isn't just go with the flow and go along with everybody. Sometimes the wisdom that's really deep is very much counter to the way society's going, to way things are structured or set up, and sometimes that makes people who impart wisdom not terribly popular. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that kind of opens up for me my preoccupation throughout my life, and I don't think I can psychoanalyze it, and nor do I want to, has been religion. Mm-hmm. Initially Christianity, attending Billy Graham's crusade here in Winnipeg way back when, going to the front, you know, and then going to seminary, sort of as an ongoing fixation with religious truth I wanted to know. And then in my middle years and later, and especially during my teaching, oddly enough, well, no, during graduate school too, because it was an introduction to world religions. There's more than Christianity, I realized. Not that it was hammered into me dogmatically, but I just had to learn about Zen and Buddhism and Hinduism and so on and so forth. So the one thing that I've been the wisdom I've arrived at, and this is countercultural, I think, to some degree, and that is that no one, absolutely no one, has figured out the answers to the big existential questions of life. Why are we here? And where are we going? And where did we come from? Mm-hmm. Certainly scientists will tell you where we come from in terms of genetic inheritance and so on and so forth. But where we're going and why we're here are still open-ended questions. So I wanted to just quote, and I won't do too much of this, a short verse from the Tao Te Ching, which is a Chinese wisdom literature text. Mm-hmm. It begins, "The Tao that can be told is not the Tao." And you could equate the Tao with ultimate reality, maybe even God. But Taoism is not theistic. But if you're going to talk about the ultimate, let's say, use that as a synonym, no one knows. Mm-hmm. And so words, actually, in this Taoist tradition, are inadequate for bringing to the fore and describing in any meaningful way what ultimate reality is. We just don't know. And for me, that caught fire in the classroom many times over, teaching a lot of Christian students who believed in their heart of hearts, and I never attacked them for it or criticized them for it. I just shared where I was leaning. And it did create some controversy because they figured they had God, in quotation marks, all figured out through their teachings, right? But then when we noticed what ultimate reality was in these other religions, particularly Eastern religions, non-Western, non-Jewish, non-Muslim, non-Christian traditions, that there's different ways of formulating what the ultimate reality is. And here's what really caught my attention. The mystics of all those traditions would assert more or less the same thing, that without that ultimate reality is best understood without words, in silence.
Mm-hmm. So if that's true, then are there ways that we convey wisdom and truth through our silence? Is it conveyed then through actions, what we do, not necessarily what we say?
Good point. Yeah. I like that.
Well, I guess that's a really good question, right? I mean, lots of times it's just allyship, right? Just standing and being
standing
present. Standing with someone, you know, inviting them into that sacred space or whatever, and you don't have to say anything, you know. I wonder about that too. I also think that that's also part of almost all the religions that you're talking
about,
right?
Yeah.
So,
though not often the most prominent.
No, that's
expression
right.
of those traditions.
Each takes it to a different level. Yeah. That's right. But I think that wisdom is in a sacred space. It's a very quiet place, too, because you get introspective about yourself, right? As I said earlier, you know, I'm learning wisdom about myself, right, that I didn't recognize before, and that's in those quiet moments.
It brings to mind for me an experience I had when we lived in India, and I went to a World Heritage site called Hampi, and it is a World Heritage site of it's a religious site, and it has been the site of many different religions over the years, centuries actually, in India, and there are ruins there from all the religions that were there, and they're restoring them as part of the World Heritage Site. And I went with a woman who was a trained archaeologist, which is a very interesting person to go to somewhere like that. But Some of the places that were restored, there was a music hall where concerts were played, and we would go in there and you could make a sound and it could be heard, like we did this, we walked one into the other, and it could be heard as though you were standing by someone, by that person, on way on the other side of the hall. And there were other places there that were so beautiful and mm-hmm. just so interesting in terms of through the centuries, yeah. you know, the people that would have been there, mm-hmm. worshipped there, sang there, found wisdom there, whatever. It was amazing. So I really resonate with that. Just that being invited into a sacred place, whatever it is a place for. Even today, I have yeah. just very strong memories of it all. Yeah. That was mm-hmm. a lot of years ago. So.
Yeah, I mean, religion can be, my thought is, can be a conveyor of wisdom, or it can be something that tries to box out exactly. any wisdom or exploration. You know, Jack, without trying to read too much into what you shared, my experience in the church was that it was quite countercultural. The culture we grew up in, Northwest BC, was already quite secular, and yeah. there was a lot of resistance to any kind of Christian or any religion.
Any religions.
And so to be there, you already felt that you were kind of on the outside, and you were sort of part of a counterculture, even though there was still an official, there was still like the official church institution. So what that's kind of led me to see is that this idea of questioning or standing against what's often seen as common knowledge or truth, and that includes, you know, say fundamentalist or very conservative types of approaches that says this is the truth and there's no other way, which you seem to have run into in classes. I experienced the opposite, that, you know, that in faith there needs to be this matter of openness and exploration and openness to other faith traditions or people with no faith traditions, that this does not mean that somehow I have exclusive wisdom or knowledge, but that there's wisdom that lies beyond that. And some of it that I will never grasp, sort of like what you said, the Tao is, it's just beyond words, yeah.
Well, and wisdom is then this challenging our own assumptions then, right?
Yeah, and to be open to that.
To be open to that, yeah.
That's the case, yeah. Maybe that's the sense of wisdom.
That would be definitely a component of it. There's the, mm-hmm. you know, the empathy, compassion component of it that yeah. we were talking about earlier with standing with someone. Mm-hmm. Even in,
yeah, creating space, right?
Creating space for them to just be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, there's always another way. So, you know, to know that there are ways. There are other ways, yeah. And not to see that as being somehow wrong or, you know, yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
No, that's interesting that you had a different experience. I think it's very difficult, for me at least, and I think for many people, especially in higher education, to say to students, I don't know.
Oh,
I see, yeah.
For sure.
I don't know. And in religion, of course, in teaching religions, who the hell knows anything? So to say I don't know is very countercultural in terms of the culture sitting before you, where knowing is of high value and you're hired to know and to teach what you know. So after a while in my final years of teaching, I would say, I just don't know. When it came to these big existential questions.
So would that disappoint students then?
Yeah,
because
it would
they were hoping
them.
For the
truth. Yeah, they're hoping, you're the authority.
Yeah.
You're the one who's been educated in all this. You should know, damn it. And if you don't know, who knows? Well, nobody knows. I'll let you in on a secret. Nobody knows.
but then to say that actually is imparting wisdom. Maybe not the kind of wisdom they're ready to hear.
But
that's like, you know, Keep your mind open. Keep searching.
Yeah.
Although in my experience of working with within the church in aspects, I often would say to people, you know, you're not the sage on the stage. Like the clergy, I would say that to clergy.
That's good.
Right?
Not the sage
you're
on the stage.
You're not the sage on the stage, right? you are not the only person in this room who has all the knowledge, all the wisdom, everything. You have to recognize that every person in your parish is also a sage. Now, they might not have all the information.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. But I remember doing that on a number of occasions in teaching different ways. And it wasn't to demean the work that they're doing. I just wanted them to see that there are sages in all aspects of our life, right?
We're all sages in our own way.
Yeah, we're all sages in our own way. And some of it sounds really silly when somebody speaks and you think to yourself, how can this person be a sage? But there's something, there's some kind of wisdom there, right? Mm-hmm. Haven't figured it out. Or the other thing I used to even say to our children was, even if you don't like what a teacher is saying in a classroom, look for the nuggets. There's gold nuggets in a lecture, you know, or in whatever the teacher's saying. You don't have to agree with everything they say. Just look for the gold nuggets, you know. And sometimes, you know, I get this ridiculous look at my face. Mom, there's no gold nuggets. So-and-so, right? With so-and-so teacher or whatever.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I don't mean for us to be fixated on religion.
No.
It wasn't.
Per se, but,
But you have something more to say.
Well, there's one quote. I've got another quote. What I wanted my students to be were seekers.
Yeah.
Not thinking they'd found it all already. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And seekers is not a very popular posture to have.
Mm-hmm. No.
Because in our culture, truths are bellowed, right? Whether it be political leaders or at times preachers, but not all, bellowed from the pulpit that this is the case of whatever you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's written, and this is one of the problems, I think, is that it's written in sacred text, in scriptures. Mm-hmm. And if it's written in scriptures and understood literally, then there's no deviation from it. Seekers are not welcome. Because it's all right there. Just read it. I believe it. God said it. I believe it. And that ends it.
Yeah, I remember that statement too. And all I could think about was, but in my religion of Christianity, it wasn't about the written word. That was part of who Jesus was. But Jesus was the foundation.
The embodiment.
So I don't want to get into the religious aspect either, but I'm just saying, there's just something about, if it's written down, it's truth. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
Well, the irony is that if you read what Jesus said, he's a scary character, demanding more than most people would ever be willing to give.
Well, and that goes back to wisdom can be a disruptor, right? I'm not just saying that, because of that, but I think...
No, but I mean, like you said...
Culture.
I think beyond religion, I mean, others have their own sacred texts. If you ever talk to people who are
good point.
Really, really deep into, say, Marxism and that, they, it gets kind of scary when you listen to them lay this out, that this is the truth. Anyways, that's the example that comes to my mind. And I think what wisdom tries to teach us, I think we're all tending to agree, is that there has to be an openness. That we never stop gaining wisdom.
And it's also taking all of those things that come at us as truths from people who are deep into Marxism, and looking at that thoughtfully. Taking the nuggets from it, because there might be some there.
There is some, yeah.
And then moving on with our own sort of worldview that is right for us, for me.
Understanding,
But incorporating, I mean, it's an openness to other things, but it's also, that discernment of how do these things really, what do they mean for me? And where do I put them in my life, in my approach? And, then I think it brings in a whole other piece that we haven't talked about yet, and that's, emotional maturity and emotional...
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness and... Mm-hmm. I read a lot about the gut-mind connection and that whole, all those words that you say about trusting your gut. And I mean, there's some truth in that because of the way that we're not just heads, we're not just minds, we are bodies. Mm-hmm. And embodied in us are many different things, including that emotional intelligence.
Yeah, emotional intelligence, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the thoughts I have is why maybe some people hold on so strongly to a truth, to look beyond that, maybe that threatens their sense of who they are, their sense of identity, their sense of certainty.
Absolutely, you know? It's unsettling.
And that, yeah, it's wisdom is disruptive. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, again, disturbing. Yeah, because and we want certainty, right? I mean, yeah.
Well, especially as we age, right? We tend to want to have more certainty.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Jack, I want to go back to something you said in another podcast too, about the fact that you're running out of time.
Yeah. And
the
wisdom needs to get out there.
It needs to get out, right? Or it needs to take a form that it does do the disrupting, right? And it does make it possible for others to become self-aware, others to have empathy and compassion, others to have a new perspective, others to have an openness, etc., right? And all those aspects of wisdom, right? And so in some ways, what do we do with that as seniors? I guess that's maybe going back to that question, what do we do with it?
And because everybody has their wisdom gained through experience.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What do people do when they're older, full of wisdom, and maybe not have the avenues for sharing that wisdom?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to be creative about it, I think, more than anything. We also have to, in some ways, have to be a bit cautious about it. Mm-hmm. I think I've told you the story about just before our oldest became an adult at age 18, I began to read like crazy any books I could find on parenting an adult, right? And one of the main themes that kept coming through that was, you gotta learn how not to spout out your advice all the time. Like, they don't need that. They want to be, they're in a time in their life in which they need to discern what is important. And if they need your help, they should be able to call on you, but you shouldn't be offering it up that way too. And I guess for me, that has been sort of a guiding principle, even in sharing my own wisdom, right, was to recognize, you know, have they asked for this wisdom? Mm-hmm. Because even though I might have all this wisdom inside of me, you know, are they looking for it?
Yeah, and some of that's recognizing that even though we tend to assume their context is the same as ours, it's not.
It's different.
It's not. And as they've aged through the teen years into adulthood, their experiences can be vastly different from ours, even though they live, say, in the same society, in the same town, in the same, general culture. Yeah, so I think that's something we need to recognize.
And that's worth paying attention to, and that's part of wisdom, too, is that paying attention to what is happening to other people in the context that they have, and respecting that, and finding ways to connect and have the conversation, how it's same and how it's different. And I think there's just so much. I've learned so much from my children, so much. Mm-hmm. They've taught me so much.
Mm-hmm. Or I found too with younger colleagues, right?
Yes.
I'm just so amazed at what they've taught me over the years. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of the thoughts is my grandchildren, when they were quite little, how their fascination with things that I began to take for granted, like, you know, a bug on the ground or the shape of a stone or a leaf on a tree, and they're just so fascinated, and you realize, you go, that is beautiful, that is intricate, that is fascinating, which is perhaps I had when I was a child, but so lost it over the years. So sometimes wisdom you gain from your family is wisdom that you regain from your family too.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I wonder why it is that we are hesitant to live in mystery. Mm. That it's unsettling mm-hmm. not to say we know or I know
everything.
But when you think about it, the great issues in life, like life and death itself, what happens after death?
Oh, it's, yeah.
It's a mystery.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. What are we part of in this universe? Mm-hmm. We don't know. We know we're part of a planetary system around a sun, mm-hmm. but we don't know what our that galaxy that our planetary system is part of is about at all. We just don't know. It's too expansive.
So
never mind the universe at large.
So how would you equate that mystery with wisdom? How would you?
Well, I think.
Or would you have any kind of connection to this?
You may have heard of Krista Tippett.
Yes.
And yeah. She's a public radio person. She has this, she said this. She tries to evoke in her audience and her guests conversations that don't try to resolve mystery, mm-hmm. but to dwell within it in love and curiosity.
And that's a way, when we talk about wisdom and we want to get it out, but that's actually not always necessary, but we can just lay it out as a mystery.
And maybe that's a good way to leave it today as a mystery.
We don't want to box in the possibilities, right?
So thank you for listening today on our thoughts about wisdom. And again, if you have any thoughts yourself, please shoot them on to us. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.